Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we'll go to our Tuesday music feature. Each Tuesday we choose a different artist or album or mini genre or event to talk about in depth. And today we're taking it back to the swinging 60s with the queen of the mods, Dinah Lee. Bursting onto the music scene out of Christchurch, she was a success right out of the gate with her debut album Introducing Dinah Lee in 1964. She found major success across the ditch too. She became New Zealand's most successful female artist of the 1960s. And to take us through her music and career, I'm joined by Dr. Kimberly Kennedy, who is a senior lecturer in ethnomusicology and director of the Music Studies Program at Victoria University. Kimberly is currently authoring a book about Dinah's debut album for the popular 33 and a Third series. Hi there, Kim.
Hi.
Nice to have you on the show today. And now tell us a bit about your upbringing, because I don't think you're a born and bred Kiwi.
No, you'll hear pretty much as soon as I start talking that I'm not. I am from the U.S. and born and raised in Michigan, the Midwestern part of the country. But I moved to this country 11 years ago, so I'm a citizen of both countries now. But how that informs my work with Dinah Lee is that I didn't grow up with her. Mm. So I had the really pretty awesome experience of getting to know her music and then getting to know her as a person just over the last few years.
How did you come across her?
So it's a long story that I'll try to keep short here, but a few years ago I became more interested in New Zealand's record label Viking Records and have a colleague who's working at the National Library in the music space and would talk about this record collection, and I thought, well, let's get in there and see what this is all about. Because I've always been interested in the mid-20th century popular music scene here. I mean, by always, I mean once I moved here. Anyway, so a few years ago, with the help of a really great research student, we got into the National Archives and actually looked at the donated material from Viking Records. And it's an amazing collection. There's just so much material from the late 1950s, and especially the sort of golden period from about 1962 to 1968. There's pop musicians like Dinah Lee and Peter Poza, but there's also a lot of recordings from across the Pacific Islands and just a wide variety of musicians from around the country. And in doing that work, it was, I mean, a lot of these records stood out to me, but I was really interested in Dinah Lee and in her albums. She had three released with Viking Records. And so from that project, I decided to kind of narrow down the scope a little bit and focus more specifically on Dinah Lee.
And what a great commission, writing a book for the 33 and a Third series. For people who haven't come across that series before, can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, it's a global series, so first and foremost. It's published by Bloomsbury. And what I like about it, I mean, I am an academic. I do academic writing. And this is a series that, in a lot of ways, has that academic background to it. So it goes through the same type of peer review. But it really has a popular outreach. So these are sold, like Unity Books is selling some of these books. So there's more, I think, access to them than some other styles of academic writing.
Yeah, I mentioned before, I've got a couple of them, and it seems to me that the editors really encourage you to totally nerd out on the music.
Yeah, they do. But then as an academic, they also try to make sure that we write it in a style where somebody might want to read it who is not also an academic. So I appreciate that challenge. And the premise of it is that each book focuses on one album, hence the 33 and a third. Not that all albums would have been played at 33 and a third, but, you know. So each book focuses on one album, and there are different sort of branches of this series globally. So there's an Oceania series that focuses on books from this part of the world. Or albums on this part of the world.
And you've I suspect she's probably better known for her singles, but you've chosen Introducing Dinah Lee, which is her debut album, correct?
Yep. So that's the one that I'm writing a book about.
Shall we play a song, and perhaps you can tell us what we're listening for here, what made Dinah Lee special?
Yeah. Do you want to play it first or do you want me to talk first?
Why don't you tell us a bit about this one, Don't You Know Yokomo, and where it sort of fits into her body of work and, yeah, again, what we're listening for.
So this is one of her first singles released. So it was released and she was performing it live as well before the album came out. So the single was released in August 1964 and then the album itself was released a couple of months later. And so on this album, she's backed by Max Merritt and the Meteors, who were a really popular, more sort of rock-focused band in the country at the time. So she was working with some really top-notch musicians. And in terms of what to listen for, one of the things that always stands out to me when I listen to her, of course, is her voice. And I think that what you hear here is both a sort of fluidity and smoothness to her voice, as well as that ability to bring a sort of rough edge to it, too. In terms of emphasizing different lyrics. And I love hearing how she sings and the sounds of early rock and roll coming in as well with the electric guitar solos and just a lot of things going on.
Thank you. Here it comes. Yeah, great voice with a real rough edge, as you note, Kim. Dr. Kimberly Kennedy talking about the music of Dinah Lee. And would I be right in thinking the lyrics in that are sort of nonsense lyrics, Kim, or is there something going on there?
Yeah, some of them are sort of more, you know, however you want to describe it, vocals.
Just a bit of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And it does make you want to move. I'm sure it made people want to move in the early 60s.
Well, you can see it, and there's actually great footage available of her performing this live, and she is just dancing and singing in such a smooth way up on the stage. And I mean, but people in the audience, at least some of this footage, are just kind of sitting and watching this because it was also quite new at the time.
Yeah, people didn't know that it was natural to dance along. And I think that was somebody else's song. That would have been pretty standard in 1964. You took a standard or a popular song from overseas and then you brought your own personality to it.
Yeah, I mean, so that song is an interesting example in that because it was originally, I believe, written and performed by a black American man named Huey Piano Smith. But then actually what I can hear, and Dinah talks about this herself, is that somebody else released that in 1963, Dee Dee Sharp. And then Dinah is also then further playing with that example of it. And so some of the lyrics have already changed to represent the different gender. So instead of singing, "Hey, little girl, let's, you know, rock and roll," it's "Hey, little boy." So it's the sort of like chain of musical material. And that was really common at the time. So not just for musicians here, but around the world, you know, the way that music circulates and in this popular music sphere, I mean.
One of the lyrics is Rite Petite, and that's also the name of another one of her songs. Is that just a coincidence, or is it maybe a popular sort of phrase at the time?
Yeah, so it's not quite a coincidence, actually. So Rite Petite, the next song, is not from that album, but it was her second single. So she was performing it around the same time. And I've been doing some research on this term, you know, Rite Petite, what exactly did it mean?
Yeah.
And so there's some disagreement, especially whether you're using American English or British English and then New Zealand English. But a lot of writers relate it back to the Jazz Age and a type of slang that could be used to mean that something is, like, fantastic. There was a band leader, actually, Louis Jordan, who had a song called Rite Petite and Gone. So that language was around and coming more from that sort of Black American musical heritage.
Should we have listened to this one?
Yep.
Okay, here it comes. By Dinah Lee, originally by Jackie Wilson. As I recall, it was a hit again in New Zealand in the 1980s as well. I've got maybe a little remix or a re-release at least. One of our listeners writes, "I love Dinah Lee, one of the few women music stars at the time, so a big influence. I copied her hairstyle and her sassy style with glee. I was a student nurse at the time looking after her dad, and I used to take him down to the Aranui pub in his wheelchair to watch her sing, and I loved it. Lovely memory, thank you." Marie in West Auckland says she was born in 1961, so she listened to Dinah in utero and remembers her mum singing Blue Beat to her. So it was more than just the songs, Kim. It was the look.
Yeah, the look was a big part of it. And in terms of how she was written about at the time, sometimes there was just so much emphasis placed on her appearance. And sometimes people thought that that was, you know, more important than the music itself, or they only focused on her style. And one of the things that I'm trying to do in the book is actually bring those two things together and position her look and her fashion as part of her artistry that goes together with her musicianship, instead of sort of seeing it as something separate or more frivolous, if that makes sense.
And you mentioned Viking Records earlier. What do you know of that label?
So Viking Records, again, they have this really interesting history. So they sort of developed in the late 1950s. The fellow named Murdoch Riley was really behind that, and he had been involved in earlier New Zealand-based record labels. And throughout the 1960s, they're recording not all, but quite a lot of the local musicians here. And so it's a really important record label for our musical history.
We've got a couple extra songs to play. Thank you, by the way, for putting all this time into the research for this. We can't wait to see the book. Any interesting stories you've uncovered in your research?
Well, part of writing this book, what was really important to me, because Dinah is, you know, just living here in Wellington now, and so before I even sort of started the process of writing the book, I got in touch with her to see if that's okay. Like, does she want a book written about her?
Yeah.
And I wanted to try to build a relationship with her through that process. So that's been a really great part of doing this type of research, is I've been able to spend some afternoons with her and just talk with her, because there's actually a lot of material from Dinah in the National Library. There are other interviews that were done with her over the years that are recorded, so you can listen to her, for example, from the 1990s. She's donated a lot of her sort of scrapbooks and the, you know, notebooks where she kept track of all the press about her and photographs. So there's so much material available publicly. But when you actually get to sit down and talk with her about it, it brings a whole new light to that. And one of the sort of one story that I have been thinking about lately is the last time that I met up with her, she very graciously pulled out some of her notebooks that she's not yet donated to the library. And she was going through, they're very, you know, neatly organized by time. And she was going through these notebooks from 1964, you know, 63, 64, around the time when she's working on this album and it comes out. And we're turning the pages. And then there's these two scraps of paper there. And I'm looking at it. And they're notes to her, like handwritten notes to her. And I was like, does that say Paul McCartney? And she's like, yep, and that's John Lennon.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's, you know, it goes to sort of show how well connected she was at that time.
Gosh.
Because, you know, she spent time with them herself. And I think it, you know, she has other photographs and other autographs and just not even autographs, just notes to her. And it really shows how much she was part of this bigger sort of popular music movement. And she was also at the center of it for folks down here in New Zealand.
We've mentioned Do the Blue Beat. We better play that one next. And this would be, by some measure, her most famous song.
Yeah, people tend to know this. And this was the opening track on the album, Introducing Dinah Lee.
And did she write this one?
No, she didn't. So this is actually written by two fellows, Mark Barkin and Ben Raleigh, who were based at New York's Brill Building, which is, you know, a whole other story in terms of songwriting at the time. But this actually comes from the Brill Building sort of writing era.
Great, here it comes.
Come on and do the blue beat, 'cause that's the dance to do. Come on and do the blue beat, and you'll never be blue. Whoa, my baby does the blue beat. Really swing.
Dinah Lee and Do the Blue Beat. This is our Tuesday music feature on RNZ National. Someone says, solid bass playing by Ian Glass. I can't confirm who's playing the bass, but Max and the Meteors used to often back her. Is that right, Kim?
That's right, yeah.
And how did those two acts interact? Were they... Do they spend a lot of their time, career performances together?
Well, in the early part of her career, they did a lot of the backing of her early singles and of this first album. And there was also some connections through live performances. And so Max Merritt and the Meteors actually had to go on a tour at one point and asked Dinah Lee and the Playboys that she was performing with to come up to Auckland and take their regular performance spot so that they could go on tour.
Great.
So they were really supportive of her career and also, you know, played with her and backed her in the early part.
I mean, she was popular here and she was, I'm sure, well-loved because she was a New Zealander, but she was huge in Australia too, right?
Huge in Australia. I mean, I think she moved over there in 65, maybe 66, and then she was there until just a couple of years ago. So some Australians that I've spoken to about this project kind of want to challenge that she's even considered a New Zealand artist, and they want to claim her as their... You know how that one goes.
Yeah. You'll have to get used to that, Kim. Yeah. That's a very common problem over here.
Yeah, I've picked up on that.
Yeah. We should mention her second career in Australia as well.
You know, I've never actually talked... I think I know where you're going with this. is that the bodybuilding?
Yeah.
You know, I've never talked with her about it because so far we've been mainly talking about what was happening in the 1960s, and I just haven't found a way to drop that into these conversations yet. But a lot's written about that. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. You spoke to Tammy Nielsen for the book.
I did. So part of the process, and it's still ongoing, this research for it, is actually just trying to talk with as many people as I can who are either involved in the album or who have performed with Dinah since. And when I've spoken with Dinah, she spoke so positively about getting to work with Tammy Nielsen last year. And they toured together on a show that was, I think it was called Tammy Nielsen's Rock and Roll Review. And so Dinah spoke so positively about that experience. So then I sort of followed up and was able to speak with Tammy about her experience. And she also spoke very positively about working with Dinah. And what was really valuable about that was hearing sort of Tammy articulate the importance of Dinah Lee for New Zealand's popular music history, regardless of one's gender, but especially for women artists who have followed. Because there's so many ways that sometimes go overlooked that Dinah really set the foundation for what other artists were able to do, of being able to have international careers, of being able to control their own style, of being able to manage aspects of their career. And locally, Dinah really set the scene for a lot of that. And that was something that Tammy reinforced through her own experiences as a musician here.
I mean, if people looked at photos of her now, they wouldn't think, gosh, you know, what an outlier. But I imagine Christchurch in the 1960s, she would have made a real impression.
That is what, by all accounts, yes. So her style and the sort of mod appearance, this was really quite revolutionary for New Zealand, especially Christchurch at the time.
And it had its origins in England. I don't think she would pretend that she'd invented the style, but she was a great icon for it here in New Zealand. One of the things I know you consider is the ways in which men and women are treated differently when it comes to clothes and style. And I guess there's perhaps a suggestion that it might even undercut people's appreciation of her music if they see her as a style icon.
Yeah, I mean, there's this temptation, and this is something that Tammy talked about with me as well, that when I don't want to get too essentialist here, right, but there has been, especially with Dinah in her career, the way that she's been written about is that certain authors have seen her as only being concerned about her style or only concerned about her fashion, and they completely overlook her musicality and her, you know, sort of smarts with the music industry. And I think it's safe to say that that type of kind of writing off one's sort of creativity and agency tends to happen more with women who are in this sphere than a lot of the male artists.
I haven't come across that word essentialist before. Can you unpack that for me?
Yeah, just like I don't want to sort of boil it down so much that I actually sound like I'm not taking into account a lot of other factors. Like these things are complicated,
Ooh,
right?
That's good. Okay, yeah. We'll look out for essentialism on our show in the future.
Excellent.
Time for one more. What are we going to play?
So this is the last one. This is just one that I like. So this is I'll Forgive You, Then Forget You. It's actually from her next album, but it's a great breakup song, which is a category that like I can't help but love, even though I don't need them anymore, but like it's a great song.
And you know, we once did a crowdsourced feature of breakup songs for our Tuesday music feature. Perhaps we could get you to come and curate one at some point in the future, Kimberly. We love your work.
I would love that.
Yeah, great. Okay, you're on.
Excellent.
For now, thanks so much for taking us through the music of Dinah Lee today.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll look forward to the book. This is I'll Forgive You, Then Forget You.
My life.
So many, many times, dear, you have hurt me bad. And so many, many times, you make me cry. But this was the last time, baby. No second chance, no, baby. I'll forgive you, then forget you, rather let you go. So many, many times I've cried over lonely nights. The promises and broken dreams that won't come true. For I had enough of your cheating and had enough of misreading. I'll forgive you, then forget you, rather let you go. Baby, goodbye.
Dinah Lee, I'll Forgive You, Then Forget You. We stick with music.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.